Turns out we do. Well, I look like a ghost. Hang on, what's going on here? Woo-wee, can we make that any better? There we go. Hey, what's up? Thanks, Lauren on camera six, who is absolutely killing it. Welcome back, everybody, to the Late Night Playset. It's the Cars and Comedy Show. My name is Jay Ryan, and we've got a good one for you tonight. In addition to the reason you usually tune in, which is this young lady right over here, we do have you, a great big group of people on Instagram, and our friend up here in Canada, Mike. But sitting in the green room right now, sitting in the green room right now, we have Mr. Rainn Wilson is here. I like to call him the brilliant Rainn Wilson. I don't like just calling him an actor. To me, he's a lot more than an actor, but we're going to be talking to him about all sorts of things. The missus used to work with him, so we'll probably be going down memory lane just a little bit. I've met him a few times throughout the years. So, and most importantly, your questions. There's already a ton on Instagram, but whatever you have here, we'll try to get to as many as we can as well. So that's what's going on. Does anybody have anything to add at all? Canada Mike, how are you, buddy?
I'm fantastic. I'm looking forward to tonight's show. Let's get this done.
With that, take it away, Will. Goodness gracious. All right. Well, we are back. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back. It is, oh, geez, where are we? We're in here. That's Rainn Wilson. It's Tuesday, January 10th, 2022. My name is Jay Ryan. Over here, we have Nicole Ryan, and we are joined by Mr. Rainn Wilson.
Rainn Ryan.
I'm sure you've been getting this nonstop, but there is a lot of rain in Los Angeles this week, and we're graced with you after years of trying to get you here, the week of the rain.
I have been graced with not having had a single rain joke during this rainstorm except for that one. So
you see I'm sweating already. Too much running
look
around.
At that. The storm's been incredible. It's been amazing.
I can't believe you came here during the storm. What a great time. You could have canceled, you didn't. Thanks for being here.
It was amazing. I'm from Seattle. We brave the streets when water is falling from the sky.
Rochester and upstate Connecticut. So
okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. It's rain. Angelinos are, it's crazy. It starts to rain. They drive 20 miles an hour.
Or they don't go out.
Or they just don't leave their house for days. I have friends who are like, I'm just weathering the storm. I'm staying inside. It's like, guys, you're okay. You can go to Trader Joe's. You'll survive.
When I watched the news this morning, I felt all of that. I felt everything you guys are saying. But then I watched the news this morning, and it seems like every road in Los Angeles is washed out. How was it driving over here?
I saw the footage, too, but I haven't seen
one.
It
was
one.
Fine. Okay.
I've been driving all over today. I haven't seen anything like that. It's crazy.
The damn news, man. Stop watching the news. She told me you were going to be here today. We knew we were trying to get you. I didn't realize it was happening. So excited. But when it comes to the preparation card, I have just a bunch of bullets to bounce around, and I want you guys to kind of catch up because I know it's been a long time since you've seen one another, and I don't know how long.
Years.
Right? Years.
I don't know how many.
10, maybe 8, 10,
probably,
somewhere in there.
Shit, you're probably right.
We've been together 13.
Okay.
And I feel like it was right around that time. I can't remember if you worked together while we were together or if I had just missed Rain.
I think you guys were just getting together. It was around the time then we stopped working together. But Nicole was my amazing publicist for many years during my early years, launching in The Office and several movies that happened and some crazy tours. And it was just a nutty time. And you were so awesome. And it was so... working with you was amazing, and you helped so much, and we had some crazy adventures.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorites. Always, you helped me launch my career.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
You launched my career.
I know, but we're... we were together while we're a team.
Yeah.
Top tier echelon level.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I learned so much from you. It was really fun. The rocker was especially crazy. But it was...
That's not on here. Tell me about the rocker. That's not on here.
Okay. What do you want to say about the rocker?
Why was it especially crazy?
Fox hadn't done anything like it before. And were you... That was one of two movies you were maybe going to do. I think one was a holiday-ish film, and then that one. And Fox looked to me to do so. We today did the KBN things to Sean Avery. Who today there for a music festival. So we did a bunch of there.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I remember that.
So we went to music festivals, went to the Columbia Gorge. I forget what that one's called up in Washington State. And... We did. There was the crazy opening in Las Vegas.
Didn't a lot of people come?
Yeah, there was like it was like 1,000 people, but it was like this crazy Las Vegas opening. And but you're right. Fox just was basically like, here, go do the press. We went to Florida and like Minneapolis. We went all over like the places people don't usually go. Like,
what was the reason? Why was it so off?
They had national ideas that they couldn't make happen, so we did what I did with touring comedians and music people.
You were making lemonade.
Yeah, but it was a music-ish movie, so we followed that roadmap.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense, because that's the audience. That would be the audience for that movie.
Well, it didn't work.
Oh.
Because it was... Well, this is a talk show, right?
Sure.
Hi, everybody. So let's talk. So, you know, this was crazy. So picture, if you will. So I'm an actor, Jay. We don't know each other very well. But I was a theater actor in New York for 10 years. I went to NYU. Then I went to theater. I was doing theater. And I came out to L.A. And I brought this kind of comedy show out to L.A. called The New Bozina. And I met Mark Schulman, who was my manager, who was friends with Nicole, and started working in film and TV right away, but smaller, a lot of smaller stuff. And then 3-4 years into that, I get a really great part on Six Feet Under, and that was kind of my entree into larger roles, and then that got me onto The Office, essentially. So
everybody talks about The Office.
Yeah, I know. Shut up about The Office. So then,
I don't know you from The Office. I know you from all that early shit.
Oh, okay. All
right. House of 1,000 Corpses.
Okay.
I know you from.
There we go.
You know,
Come on.
Six Feet Under for sure.
House of 1,000 Corpses. I did.
I worked at Universal when you guys were shooting that movie.
Oh, no
the
kidding.
The old chicken ranch.
Yeah.
On the whatever that. The
back lot. Amazing. Yeah, that was my first like big kind of role. Rob's. In fact,
your other.
I'm seeing Rob.
What?
What?
What day is today? I'm seeing him on Thursday.
No.
Yeah.
Hi, Rob.
Yeah.
Hi, Small Rob. World.
And, but the reason I'm going into all this is I was not yet 40, and I was 38, 39. I had been acting for a super long time. And then all of a sudden I'm on this Office, and we thought it's going to get canceled. It almost got canceled a whole bunch of times. And then it becomes like this huge phenomenon. And all of a sudden I'm propelled into like superstardom. And I'd never been even like recognized before as an actor. And all of a sudden it's like I'm on the cover of magazines and hosting Saturday Night Live. Yeah. And it was crazy. And then doing a bunch of movies and stuff like that. But so it was an especially nutty time. There's nothing to kind of throw you off balance like a whole lot of fame.
So you were there during the meteoric rock. I mean, that's yeah. trajectory yeah. that not many people get to realize.
Yeah, and it happened in a really short amount
really
of time.
Short. It happened so fast. Like, I knew Mark, your manager then, from, I forget why, but we talked early, and then it was like, we need to meet now.
We need to move now.
It was so fast.
Yeah, because The Office really launched 2004, 2005, and then like 2007, I'm hosting SNL and have done leads in like three or four different movies. But it, so it was all like in a 2 year, it was like, bam. But The Rocker, Jay.
Back to The Rocker.
Was one of the biggest bombs in movie history. And because, but it, no real fault of our own. It's a very sweet, lovely, goofy movie. It's a perfectly fine movie. Families love it. Kids love it. It's not a great film, but it's a silly summer comedy, and it was totally fine. And Fox didn't know what to do with it. They kind of dumped it during Labor Day weekend on like 2,000 some screens, and they didn't promote it at all. They threw it out there, and no one went to see it. And it was the end of summer coming into school, and it tanked, and it was brutal because for me it was like, oh, here's my starring vehicle. It's my name. It's my face, you know, on the poster. Did this big tour with Nicole promoting it, and no one went to see it. It was just a bomb. And then it was my career definitely took a hit, you know, because Hollywood kind of goes, oh, not a movie star, you know.
Oh, right. You know, hit and miss, right,
and,
okay.
So, you know, I've gotten to do some other great leads in some other movies and stuff like that. But it was rough.
Oh, man, I we're going to get to the card, but there.
Go ahead.
Hesher. You remember Hesher?
Yeah.
Do you remember shooting Hesher?
I do.
I met you at the shoot. I brought my Back to the Future time machine to the set of Hesher.
I have a picture of me with it.
I know. You sat in it. You thought it was really cool.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Why did you have a Back to the Future time machine?
Why do I have this? I'm a fucking weird guy who likes these crazy land of make-believe type things.
Okay.
I built that with a friend, and it ended up being like the official Universal one for a long time, and they used it for all. That's why we were there. It was the 25th anniversary.
You
we were
built
doing a
that
bunch
thing?
Of different things. Yeah.
That wasn't like an extra one from the movie or
Correct.
Something like that.
Correct. And Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis had the exact same impressions. A friend of ours had – this is – we should be talking about you, but a friend of ours – by the name of Simon Wells, who's a great director and writer, he worked on the Back to the Future movies and was working with Bob Zemeckis and said, hey, these guys, my friends, built this thing. You got to have them bring it by. We brought it to the set. Even Bob Zemeckis said he thought we were pulling his leg. But I want to talk about you.
That's amazing. Yeah. Hesher was a great film.
I always confuse Hesher with The Rocker, though, because they both had sort of a rocker thing. But the Hesher was the other guy. It was actually the other guy was Hesher.
Joseph
you were
Gordon-Levitt
just
was the lead in Hesher.
That was an independent kind of
independent
film, right?
Film, yeah.
They
Dark.
Tried to make The Rocker mass market, and it wasn't there yet.
But we watched it. I didn't think it was a bad movie. I enjoyed the movie.
The Rocker?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
Okay.
People still all
go
the time.
Home video.
Up. Yeah. Oh, I'm any bargain bin that's out there, like you go into and you know the $1.99 DVD bin, if they still have those, or the 99-cent, it's going to be filled with Rocker DVDs. Trust me.
Got to find the Best Buy to be able to get the DVD, the bargain bin.
Yeah.
There's fewer stores.
I don't
for
even
the
think I
bin.
Have a DVD player. They're, you know, in the industry, they send the DVDs. It's like, how am I going to watch this?
The same way. Once they made it so you could do it on the iPad and through it to the TV, we were fine. Otherwise, there was about 3 years where we weren't watching screeners at all.
But can I tell you one last Rocker story?
Please.
Can we stay on this for a second? So this is one of my favorite stories about show business. So the Rocker totally bombs. The Office is just starting up again, season, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5. I can't remember which season it was. And I'm driving. You have to get in there ass early to the office because, you know, you got to get your makeup on at like 6:15, ready to shoot at 7. And then so I lived out in Agoura Hills, so I was driving, leaving at 5:30 in the morning. So I'm listening to the old L.A. icons, Kevin and Bean, on K-Rock back when people used to listen to radio and not to podcasts, right? And they're on K-Rock. And I had come in on K-Rock and promoted the rocker. And I'm driving. I'm just devastated. I'm driving. And I have to go
Alex
see.
Alex Warren over on Fairfax. Yep. I know where you're talking about.
And I have to drive in and see all my office mates. And my movie's bombed. That's going to be awkward. They're not going to know what to say. And I'm listening to Kevin and Bean, and they're like, okay, hey, it's Kevin and Bean. You know, they talk really fast, like DJs. And they're like, what, let's look at the movies from this weekend. And this movie, Tropic Thunder, was doing pretty well, and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, hey, wait a second, where's Rain's movie? I don't even see it on this list. Like, Rain, they're like, I don't see it on that. It's not even on the top 10 list. What's this? It came in 12th for the weekend? I thought it was just released. It was a big movie. Oh, no. Oh, it bombed. Oh, God, that's got to hurt. Poor Rain. Oh, my God. And I'm on the 101 freeway over by, like, Woodman, and I'm sobbing in my car at, like, 5:57 in the morning, just in my Prius, like, and it was really humiliating, and I'll never forget that moment. And that's showbiz, folks. That's how it works.
That's hilarious. I mean, but look at who had the last laugh. I mean, what's going on with morning radio these days? Is there a morning radio? Last time I drove past that place where you're talking about, K-Rock, yes. It was a Kaiser Permanente.
There's no station there anymore?
No.
So they can do it remote or
I guess,
whatever.
Or they move somewhere
else. And by the way, I want to say, they weren't being mean. They were just doing their banter, you know, but
sort of a job. Was Ralph Garman? Ralph Garman was there too?
Yeah, sure.
I brought my time machine there so Ralph Garman and I could go for a drive.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
All right. Back to the beginning. Almost Famous. One of the best movies of all time. People don't think of you in it, but you were goddamn in that movie.
I was, goddamn it. That's right when I came from New York. It was the first I did my first summer in LA. I did Almost Famous and Galaxy Quest, and I shot them both in the same summer. Which are two like classic movies, two DreamWorks classic movies. Small roles in both of them, but it was absolutely amazing.
And they're totally different audiences too, for the most part too. That's a really wide hit.
Yeah, yeah.
First summer in L.A.
Nailed it. 99.
And then that was my first summer in L.A. Really?
Yeah, that's when.
That's right, because we were both at Universal together.
Okay,
sure.
And then I got a TV pilot. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm never going to stop working. This is insane.
I'm the guy.
And I didn't work again for a year after that. And the next job I got was House of 1,000 Corpses a year later. So
you worked with the other guy on that, too.
Rob.
No.
Chris Hardwick?
Chris Hardwick, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you work with Chris?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, yeah.
How was that movie to work on? Because it was the result was really wild to watch. And I was a horror fan as a kid.
Did you see Rob's Monsters movie yet? It's on Netflix? Rob Zombie's Monsters?
I remember the TV show. Didn't he do the TV show in the same... They used that same house, ironically. He did a new show. You're right.
He did a new version of Monsters. Put it on your to-do list. I haven't seen it yet. I guess I should watch it before I see Rob on Thursday. It was super fun. I mean, it was a really great, fun cast. Rob is awesome. And Sherry, his wife, who always stars in his stuff, she's awesome. We had a blast. It was incredible.
I was there at night when they were filming it. It didn't look like a low-budget movie, the way this thing was all lit up and done. I mean, they completely... Really? They used the Miss Mona's Chicken Ranch from the... You know, people don't even remember that movie, Best Little Whorehouse.
Best Little Whorehouse, yeah.
But they redressed everything so you would never recognize it, and they built all this stuff around it. It really was an amazing set. They kind of fenced it all in. It was really wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I go back. I'm a nostalgic guy.
Yeah, I love it. What did you do at Universal? Just like build shit?
No, it was my first year here. I really snuck in and hung out a lot and tried to make friends to get jobs, which is what ended up working.
Oh, That's
kind of the Steven Spielberg story.
You heard it here, kids. Sneak onto a studio lot, make some friends, and try and get some jobs.
I had, like, my roommate had worked on the lot, so I'd go visit him, but then I'd just kind of go stroll around, that kind of thing. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, that's nice. How can I get into that? That kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Just a production assistant on everything.
All right,
like that.
All right.
But I think we also might have worked together because I was on the first season of CSI, Crime Scene Investigation, also just as a PA.
Yeah.
But all the way up in Santa Clarita when we were in the old Northrop Grumman lot in that Ride Canyon Business Park. Is that where you did it?
I played Creepy Guy in Supermarket, last episode of season one of CSI.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's another show that just went
crazy. And I had like seven lines. I'm like the guy, you think he's the bad guy, but he's not the bad guy.
Oh,
he's just a doofus bad guy. He's not the real bad guy.
That's a refreshing change.
Yeah. So.
Just the doofus.
I was just one day, but
everyone was. It's a great
song. Everyone was very nice.
One of my all-time favorite shows, and your arc is great and disturbing, 6 Feet Under. Cool. Love that show.
Oh, great, yeah.
And your work on it was excellent.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Do you feel that way?
No, I'm just kidding.
Do you feel that way? Because I really feel that way.
No,
stuff you had to do with Francis is crazy.
It was an amazing role. I mean, it was, you know, a mortician's assistant intern who has a love affair with a woman 30 years his senior. It's really cool, and he's kind of like on the spectrum and a little odd. And people always thought, like, oh, he's evil and probably a psycho killer.
I didn't get that.
I got that. You didn't get that a little bit?
Maybe I related to the guy. Maybe I was, he's a lawyer type.
You know, I'm just so grateful for that job. It was, you know, it was at the very peak of HBO's launch into premier television. You know, Sopranos was on, Entourage was on, Sex and the City was on, The Wire. They were all on at the same time.
You had everything.
This is quintessential. It's not TV, it's HBO.
Yeah, yeah. And 6 Feet Under was in the middle of that, and it would be Sopranos and then 6 Feet Under. So everyone in the industry watched it, and it was an amazing thing to be a part of. But forget that. It was a really beautiful, like, television as a work of art. You know, it was kind of it was a soap opera, but the psychology got really deep into the characters, and it was not much would happen in the shows if you look at it like from a plot standpoint. But
yeah, I agree. They seem slow and boring, but when you look at the interdimensionality and everything that's actually being told during this story, it's kind of fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Were you watching the show before you got a part and were on it?
I was. Here's my other crazy Hollywood story is, and I always share this with young actors, is I first met the casting folks there they were auditioning for The Sisters Rosenzweig, which was a Broadway play about this Jewish family. They were doing a TV movie of it. And I met Junie Lowry Johnson and Libby Goldstein to audition for that. And I said to my agent, I'm like, guys, I'm 6'2" and I'm Norwegian. And you want me to audition for, like, it was like Josh Spielstein or something. It was a very Jewish guy. And I was like, well, this doesn't really, I'll never get cast. Is it? And they're like, trust me, these casting people, they love New York theater people. You've got to meet them. Just get in there, meet them, do a great audition. So I went in, I did a good audition, and I got on their list. You know, they're like, oh, this is an interesting actor, and let's put him on this list and bring him in. And they cast me in lots of little parts and here and there. And then they started doing 6 Feet Under, and I kept wanting to get on the show. I knew Michael C. Hall a little bit from New York. I knew Peter Krause from New York because we'd all gone to NYU together. And I auditioned. Arthur, the role that I ended up getting, was the fifth role I auditioned for. So I got shot down 4 different times. And I'm so glad, because what if I had gotten cast in one of those previous small roles, tiny little roles, guest star roles?
You wouldn't have gotten the great arc.
I wouldn't have had the great 13 episodes of that amazing role. So you never know, like, when one door shuts, another door opens, you know, what the universe has in store.
But you apply that throughout life.
I try to.
Yeah.
Sometimes more effectively than others. Yeah. Yeah.
That's all of us, I guess.
Yeah.
The human condition is difficult. I'm still trying to figure it out.
It is. It really is.
You and me both. It's pretty
complicated. It is. Yeah. Life is very complicated and difficult and challenging and exhilarating all at the same time. Yeah.
You strike me, especially from your work alone, but then Soul Pancake, and we'll get into Soul Pancake a little bit, but you strike me as more of an enlightened soul, and I'm curious where that comes from. Is that something you've carried with you your whole life, or is that something that kind of came to you through success, maybe, or where does it come from for you?
I'm no enlightened soul. You know, Nicole can vouch for that.
No but way. You were always one of the best ones that I knew, enlightened-wise, of the people I worked with.
Oh, she doesn't
That's
agree.
That's very sweet.
I think
okay.
you were.
You weren't as business-oriented. It wasn't about that. It was about what's the next chapter of my life.
The story.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Well, you know, spirituality, spiritual questions, and spiritual journeys is always something that's been really important to me and something that has intrigued me. It's something I study and I read about a lot.
Okay.
And that's a very weird thing in Hollywood because people don't really talk about that.
Yep.
And when they do, it's kind of like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow, gooey, like crystals and incense and stuff like that. And that's not really what I'm talking about, although that's all fine. So I don't know that I have any insight or special wisdom, but it's something that is very intriguing to me.
But have you, I guess the question was that I probably misasked was, have you always been that way or when did it start? Where did it come from? When did you get curious maybe?
Well, I think I really did when my parents were members of the Baha'i faith. So I grew up a member of the Baha'i faith. And so they were always engaged in spiritual conversations. And there were books on the shelf about Buddhism and about Sikhism. And we would have, you know, special guests come and speak. And it was just always rich with kind of philosophical conversations. And you'd asked about Soul Pancake, which was a digital media company that I started several years after The Office launched, around 2009 or so, 8 or 9. And it was just that. It was a digital media company, YouTube channel to explore life's biggest questions. So something I guess grew up interested in. I've always been interested in, like, you know, what happens when we die?
Yeah.
What's the meaning of life? And I haven't really been afraid to kind of ask those questions that no one really likes to look at.
I think that's what it comes down to.
Okay.
I think a lot of people are afraid to look at existentialism.
Mm-hmm.
there's only a few ways it can go. Mm-hmm. Or I guess there's maybe infinite, but I don't know. I think probably when she got sick around 15, 16. So, well, you got sick in 11, but 15, 16 is when it really started getting, you know, showing its face.
When we noticed it.
Mm-hmm. When life starts to implode and all the things you sort of used to think were important crumble around you. And,
yeah.
And the things you used to sort of just treat as not that important became like the most important things in the world for us. It was around that time that we started sort of investigating what it's all about, you know, at least figuring out what we're all about. But it took something like that for us. It took something that was like a life-altering type of punch in the face wake-up call. And I guess I'm one of those people who wished that I was that way his whole life, be it from parental influence or whatever, because I feel like I would have done a lot more for this world in the past 20 or 30 years. I'm looking forward to what we're going to do in the future. But I feel like I missed out or something.
Do you know the author Julia Cameron, who wrote the Writer's Way, The Artist's Way? You know The Artist's Way?
Yep.
It's a book. It's like a journaling book. It's sold millions of copies, and it helps you find your artistic path, and you do morning pages and journaling. Yeah. And she once said, she had a quote, which is, I became spiritual not by anything holy, but out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, you know, you guys were hit with this big setback of your illness. And I think that oftentimes the big spiritual questions come up when we suffer the most. I know for me, I didn't really think about it too much through my 20s. And then I dealt with some real mental health issues, you know, in my 20s. I dealt with addiction. I dealt with depression, anxiety. And I didn't know what it was back then, because in the 90s, you didn't really talk about, like, mental health, right?
The 90s, that was just grunge, man. That's just how we lived.
That's it. It was just Seinfeld and grunge, right? So But when I look back on it now, it's like, oh, wow, you know, I would have anxiety attacks. I was depressed. I was suffering from addiction, drugs and alcohol and everything else. And it was the pain of that stuff that kind of drove me deeper kind of in my 30s and especially early 40s to kind of really explore some of these questions on a deeper level. And I think that's how it works sometimes, because if you're comfortable and life is good and you don't have to think about God and meaning and death and the soul and will, then, you know, then why do it?
Yeah, maybe it's that. Maybe it is that.
So what have you guys been exploring? What have you been thinking or
well, it's been
believing or investigating?
Honestly, that period sort of was like, for me anyway, I think for you too, but it was really like cracking the egg open. I mean, it was really like, oh, well, you can't put any of this back, you know, the Matrix, the pill, all of that kind of thing. And it's not about getting woke or any of that for us. It wasn't that. It was more on the lines of, what are we all about? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why do we choose to exist? Do we want to be in this world? And if we do, what do we want to make of it versus just kind of the ride that we were all on? Basically being maybe more present, taking a more active role in your own life, perhaps.
And you built this.
Yeah. And the dining room turned into a TV station.
It's fantastic. It's fantastic. You could lease hilarious. This out to like morning shows.
That's right. Yeah.
You could rent this out to do shoots in here.
If you know anybody, if you want to do a movie where you write in a talk show set, let's rent it out.
Oh, here we go. Okay, good.
What about you guys? How did you start working together? When was it in that career?
I don't remember exactly when, but everything was Fast and Furious. You said SNL, and they were one of my first calls. Because that's the trajectory Mark said you were on of like next step.
Yeah, you don't just get offered SNL hosting. I mean, people don't probably realize that, but it's such a freaking list. You really got to be hot.
Yeah.
I mean, that says a lot. We have it hanging over our fireplace is the that wonderful photographer.
Marilyn Matthews.
Good job.
Oh, wow. Very nice. Yeah.
Love her.
From your from the bumper cards with you and all the different outfits.
Yeah. I have that same one hanging in my office.
So, do you really?
Yeah, I got that exact same one. Yeah,
lovely. And then you're over here as well.
I mean, one of my look at that. Yeah, one of the high points of my life was hosting that show. It was an incredible experience. Growing up watching it at age 12 and 13 and 14, and then being on that same set, it was unbelievable. But yeah, I met Nicole. I think my manager, Mark, knew her and liked her, and I met with a bunch of publicists and just immediately connected with her, and it was a lot. The office, like I said, you know, it went from like almost being canceled to being like the number one comedy, and
for
not
a
only
while.
That, like the hottest comedy with people were talking about. It was winning awards. It was all those award shows, and
I feel like it was just in the people's culture, because I didn't watch the show, but everybody was, that's what she said, or, you know, whatever, some line from the show.
Yeah.
So many friends today ask me, ask him if I can bring him coffee. I don't even get the joke. But obviously, bringing you coffee or you bringing coffee or something is some sort of joke. Like five different people said it.
Okay.
I was working at David E. Kelly at the time, and the British DVDs made their way around, and everybody kind of took them home for the weekend, and we passed them around. And everybody was talking about it, and we really, really enjoyed it. And then, like, the next year, NBC was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do that show. And we're like, oh, that's cool. Well, let's check it out. And then the first episode was like, we've seen this one. We're like, what's going on? So I think mentally I must have put a block up and then never went back. But everybody I know loves that show.
Yeah. It's and
how
it's,
do you feel about
well,
it?
Well, I love it too. I mean, I think it's a great show, and I think that, it's been almost 10 years since it was finished.
No.
Yeah, I think this.
Really?
Yeah, I think this spring it'll have been 10 years since we.
Oh, God. Okay. Thanks for that. Yeah, thanks for that.
That puts it all into.
You're on morning radio.
That's great. Kevin and Bean. And. Yeah, I think it's great, but it was really interesting because it really tailed off the last several years. I mean, even when Steve was on it, it was tailing off, and then Steve left and it really tailed off. and the last.
What does that mean, ratings wise?
Yeah, ratings wise, and
it doesn't seem like it ever got any less popular in my
mind. It got a lot less in the last couple of years, and then when it finished, almost 10 years ago, let's say 9 years ago, when it finished, no one was thinking about it anymore. It was just done.
Oh, interesting.
And it was not in the zeitgeist. It wasn't really on that many reruns. It was just like kind of over with.
It went away really fast.
It went away.
Huh. The streamers didn't exist yet, and they certainly didn't play it how they knew to.
I don't recall ever seeing it in syndication either, come to think of it now that you mentioned
it. It was there a little bit.
Okay.
Just a little. But then... Yeah, and then all of a sudden Netflix comes along and they do their little algorithm, you know, investigations, and they're like, oh, this show is interesting with young people we want to attract. And all of a sudden, I don't even remember when it was, 2018-ish, mm-hmm. 2017-ish, I get recognized like more and more and more, and like by younger and younger kids, and 11 and 12 and 13 year olds, and
well,
like,
that's good.
Are you Dwight? And and all of a sudden it becomes again, like, so we went through this explosion in 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, right in that those early years, and then again, you know, 10 years later, this whole other explosion, whole new, much larger audience that didn't even know that it was an old TV show or how
they didn't know that part.
No, they just,
it just popped up on
13 year olds just turn on Netflix and there's like this show, The Office. They didn't know it was NBC Thursday nights, you know.
Right.
That was a big deal.
Yeah.
How'd they get that right when I called everyone?
Well, and Carell wasn't a big deal when the show started, right?
No.
So
it
is
started.
It the people now, then they, oh, there's that guy I like from the other movies or whatever, and
well,
they'll put that on?
He had just done Anchorman, and then in our first year, he did 40-Year-Old Virgin and Little Miss Sunshine came out in the same year.
Oh,
so he just rocketed to superstardom.
Holy crap. Well,
he didn't do The Rocker. He did.
Or that PR tour for The Rocker.
He did The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which made $200 million, and The Rocker made like four or something. So anyway. But that kept us on the air, was those early movies of Steve's. So,
wow, that's amazing. But I just read about this with friends. You know, there was the resurgence once it hits the streamer, and I didn't realize that's one of the reasons that Office is still.
When is the resurgence of this of late night play set?
Oh, right, we're waiting for the first wave.
Oh, you're okay. You're not there yet.
This is the one. This is the one right here.
Are we going to talk about Cars?
Yeah, you want to? Do you like Cars at all?
No.
You don't strike me as a carpenter. You liked the time machine that day. That was my car story.
But I do have a car story for you.
Let's hear it.
I got a really sweet ride waiting for me right down there in Toluca Lake on the street outside.
Let's hear it.
I got the Ford Lightning F-150 electric pickup truck.
Well, that actually is a super cool thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it a pickup? Press car or do you own it?
I own it.
Congratulations.
You bought a pickup. Whoa.
Yeah. A pickup, me. I've had been Teslas. I've been using Teslas, driving Teslas, and I liked them. I got a little tired of the newish Tesla lease I got, so I abandoned that. And then I did this talk at this car company called Ken Garf, and they own like 40 car dealerships. And I did an inspiring, uplifting talk to Ken Garf and company. And they're like, hey, let us know if you need anything. I was like, well, do you have any of those Ford F-150 Lightnings? And they're like, ooh.
That's hard to get.
That's hard to get. They're like, we have one coming in. There's a waiting list of like 170 people. But we'll put you at the top. And I was like, great. So I got, it's a sweet ride. You got to come down and see it.
What color did you get?
It's the.
The color they had, I guess.
It's the color they had, but it's a gray. It's a real nice gray, kind of a slate gray. I forget. It's some, you know, they make up the names for this. It's like
Horizon Gray.
Switzerland or Gray. Or,
Do you have a charger at home or do you
rely have a charger at home?
That's nice.
Yeah. The problem with electric cars, so Teslas, especially on the West Coast, like we
I love you came loaded for this. You were prepped to talk about this. I'm
well, I can talk about anything. You can ask me about, like, biscuits or nose hairs or World War One or whatever. I'll monologue about pretty much anything. But Tesla's. So my wife and I go up to Oregon a lot, and you know, there's chargers that superchargers up and down. So it's really not bad at all. You know, instead of
Western Seaboard is not bad.
Yes. Okay. So if you want to stop for. You're going to stop for 6 minutes and load up on gas, then you're just stopping for 40 minutes to load up on electricity, essentially.
But when you work in a family and you're getting food and bathrooms and everything else, that probably works out, right? You could kill 40 minutes quickly.
It's kind of the same, yeah. Okay. And so that, but the non-Tesla electric charging network is not as good. The charge point or, you know, whatever they call it. Yeah. And it's a lot slower. So, but this is great for going around town. It's great, you know.
What is the range?
320 miles.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty damn good. Have you come close? Have you?
Range anxiety?
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Well, on the Tesla, a couple of times. Yeah.
On trips, though.
On trips, yeah. Okay. We went up to Mammoth, and the temperature was dropping, and we were fully charged, and the temperature was like dropping, and we were climbing up the mountain, and it was like getting like 20 degrees, 15 degrees, 10 degrees, 5 degrees, and the battery just went pew, and we barely crawled into Mammoth. I swear we had to like push it into
There's
Mammoth.
Nothing between some of those, the towns where you have to slow down for the stoplight for 25 miles. There's nothing in between.
Yeah.
I can't believe there are even electric chargers up there.
Oh yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of Los Angeles douchebags up there.
Have you been electric for a while? You said you were Tesla before this one.
I went electric the same year Bob Dylan did.
These times they are changing.
Newport Folk Festival. No, the. it's been a lot. I had a bunch of Priuses and then like. Two and a half Teslas in a row. So yeah, like 7 years of electric, and then I had a Volt for a while. So it's been like 8 years electric.
Everything you just said makes me think you're not a car guy.
Yeah, I'm not a car guy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's had a couple Priuses, two and a half Teslas because you got sick of the lease. I know.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lightning is a pretty wild choice. That Rivian's pretty damn cool too.
That's pretty good. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
I think I like the look of the Rivian because it looks like a Cars character. It's kind of got a face to it, you know?
Yeah, it looks like it would merchandise really well.
For sure. You know? What a happy product. I want that in my life.
Yeah. But the Ford Lightning is sweet. It drives sweet.
Well, the old Lightning was cool. The gas-powered Lightning was a rocket. Can I ask some Instagram questions for you?
Sure.
All right. Wait, are you into cars? I guess we just handled that one, Andrew at Large. I think he worked at the ad agency I was at in New York City before his big break. Did you ever work at an ad agency?
Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners.
Excuse me.
You're excused. Kirschenbaum Bond and Partners, how may I direct your call? Who is this?
This is our friend Tom. Tom, 1983,
911 SC. I have no idea who that is. Yeah.
Tom Fong is his last name.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell. I was there though. Yeah, I was there 9 months. I was a receptionist.
Receptionist.
Yeah. Like Pam from The Office.
Don't get the reference. Were you going to school during that time, or was it after NYU?
No, I was
before
a theater
coming to LA?
Actor looking for little odd jobs to pay the bills as Living. I went on auditions. Yeah.
But early 20s, probably.
I think I was at that point late 20s, early 30s. It was one of the last jobs I had before I left New York. 97, 98, right in there.
JC Goodlett, too. Question about his character on The Office. How much of that character was you? How much did you make it yours versus the intent of the writers and director? And what were some of your best moments on set? Brilliant work in total.
Thank you. A lot of questions. So we were very fortunate on The Office that Greg Daniels, the creator of The Office, was very collaborative. So he really wanted people to be bringing themselves to the role. And I had several meetings with the writers, and I brought home family pictures. And like, I have this really kind of white trash family in Washington State. And I brought in a lot of pictures of them. So I think that gave them the idea of like Dwight having like a muscle car. And then I have a lot of farmer ancestors from the Midwest. So I think the beet farm, although the beet farm came from Greg Daniels because his great-great-grandparents had a beet farm in Poland.
Does your character have a... There's a beet farm in...
Yeah.
Okay.
Boy, you really don't. You don't even know that Dwight has a beet farm. You are...
What? That sounds obscure to me.
That's the whole premise of season 2+.
Yeah, Dwight has a beet farm.
You say
and
it's on Netflix? I'm going to check it out.
No longer. Peacock now.
Okay.
So it was really interactive. You know, like I got to throw in story ideas, character ideas. They wrote for my voice. I tried to capture what they wanted from the character. Oh. So it was just one of the reasons the show, I think, was so successful is because it was just an amalgam of the actors, the writers, the producers, the editors, all kind of working together to create something kind of greater than themselves.
The show felt different at the time, too. Were you guys going to make it? Was that an intent to like, well, this is going to be not like things on television? We're going to slap people in the face with different.
Yeah, it was an interesting balance because obviously the British office is very dark. The British office is also like 30 minutes long episodes. You can't do that on network TV. It's got to be 21 minutes and 45 seconds or
commercials
like that.
And the ads.
Yeah. So much shorter episodes, like a quarter shorter. And but we wanted it to be a network, an accessible network show that was funny and fun for the whole family. But at the same time, yeah, it was a documentary style, mockumentary, poorly lit, kind of regular looking people. It wasn't a lot of, you know, like supermodel-ish kind of people. I mean, Jim and Pam are kind of attractive, but little. So there were some... it was very, very different than what was on network. And NBC, honestly, they never knew what to do with us. They were so confused that the show was popular. They wanted to cancel it, and then it was popular. They didn't know how to have other shows that matched with it. They just
what do you pair it with, right?
They did not know what to do.
Well, that's really the question is always what's next too, right? And you're like, we're going to do this for a while.
And I tried to do a Dwight spinoff, which we created.
I was kind of like,
oh, I guess I'll be like Frasier did Frasier spinoff, and
right.
And they passed on it. And honestly, they would probably have $1 billion more in the bank if they had picked up the Dwight spinoff. Would it have been as good as The Office? No. Would it have been half as good? Yes. Would it be playing on streaming services, you know, and getting a really large audience? Absolutely.
Definitely.
It would have. Yeah. And, you know, they really...
Did they even try it? Like, did they do a pilot and stuff?
We did what's called a backdoor pilot. So there was an episode of The Office that was about Dwight inheriting his beet farm and trying to turn it into a bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of like, this is where the show would live.
Right.
And Thomas Middleditch, who was from Silicon Valley, he was cast as my brother on the show. So we discovered Thomas Middleditch.
I bet that would have been very nice. Very nice. I bet that would have been great chemistry. I would like to see that. No place to see this, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, you can still see the episode called The Farm, but they cut a lot of the stuff out of it. But it gives you a little sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's wild. Dwight, you got bobbleheads? I mean, like...
Crazy. People send me pictures all the time. Like, they walk through Target and it's my face on like a thimble or a dish towel or an avocado holder, or name it.
Avocado holder. What year? But am I wrong in thinking that you're the breakout character? Like, I can't think of another Craig maybe, but even he was more.
You haven't watched the show, so you don't be pontificating on who's the breakout character. You've never even seen
it. Content-wise, you're right, but socially, I would be more aware than most people.
Yeah, I think so. You know, Dwight is he's weird and stands out, and young kids like him, and young boys, he's kind of a hero to folks. Yeah.
TV guy, different audiences like different people. For TV guy, they always wanted to pair you with Steve. So it's like pick your poison. Like, which way are you going?
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly.
Daniel Harrison wants to know, what was your first acting gig and how did you come to landing it? Were you working full time in another industry when you were trying to become an actor? Thanks.
So thank you. Thanks for your question. I went to acting school. I see that you're controlling the cameras.
Everything's
That's
happening
amazing.
Live. Yeah, everything's happening live here. I'm Dave and Hal at once.
That's
and then we
incredible.
Don't forget we've got producer Mike up in Canada who's been listening the whole time.
Hey, buddy, how's it going? You look Canadian.
Pleasure to meet you, Rain.
You look like you look up Canadian in the dictionary, and that guy's in.
There he is.
That picture. I did it the old-fashioned way. I went to acting school at NYU, so I moved. I did a bunch of college plays, and I was living in Seattle, and I auditioned and got into NYU acting school, and I moved in 1986 as a young teen with all my boxes and moved to New York City.
Did you know anybody?
I didn't know anybody. Went to acting school and spent 3 years doing that, and then got out of acting school. And I did a lot of Shakespeare. My first acting job was Shakespeare in the Park.
Holy crap, man.
Yeah. So I did two shows at Shakespeare in the Park over the summer, and then I did a touring company called the Acting Company, and we toured all over the United States doing Shakespeare and classical plays. And then I worked at Arena Stage and the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis and Dallas Theater Center and a bunch of regional playhouses, and did a ton of theater and cut my teeth, you know, doing weird characters on the stage.
I had no idea, but it's so impressive to me. I loved it. I'm a theater nerd too.
Oh, wow.
I was a techie, you know, as a kid. So
okay.
If you were doing theater,
Cars and theater.
Tech stuff, nerd stuff. Honestly, truly, it was invisible stuff. This being in front of the camera is very new. That's all since the new life.
Yeah.
I can't remember where the hell I was going to go with that. Next question. Everyone, by the way, people say, just genius. Man, that's awesome that you're here. Question from Lauren on camera 6 and Isabel as they drive through snow near Mount Shasta on the way back to college. A la Lewis and Clark. Rain, what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
Boy, that's good. He really stumped me. I really am resistant, Jay, to the pumpkin spice phenomenon.
Oh, no. Oh, resistant to it.
I'm resistant to it also. Yeah, I don't like being duped and like, oh, God, it's September 10th. Time to launch the pumpkin spice.
Not into seasonal.
Everything is like pit stick and it's pumpkin spice deodorant, pumpkin spice, you know, dental floss. But I will say that sometimes a pumpkin ice cream can be really, really savory and delicious.
In that case, when you're having that pumpkin ice cream, you probably even want it a little bit spicy.
A little spice wouldn't hurt it.
Tiny, tiny.
Yeah.
A little cinnamon. Mm.
Yeah.
Nutmeg.
But I'm a big mint chocolate chip I like.
Oh, that's a classic.
Lemon is always good.
Lemon ice cream? I don't think I've ever heard of it.
Sorbet.
Sorbet, okay.
Yeah.
That I've heard of.
Yeah.
Do you prefer sorbet or sherbet? And do you say sherbet or sherbert?
I grew up eating sherbet.
Me too.
You know, in suburban Seattle. You want some sherbet?
Me too.
We got raspberry sherbet in the fridge.
Oh, we had the tri-flavor, whatever the tri-flavor was.
Neapolitan sherbet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
but it wasn't Neapolitan because it's like lemon, cherry, and lime or something.
Orange. Yeah.
Sherbet. And then it was only 10 years ago before I actually looked at that word, and it's spelled sherbet. There's no R in sherbet.
Yeah, but we called it where did you, you were from Connecticut.
Yeah, right about 45 minutes outside of Manhattan.
No, we were just hard R, sherbet.
Sherbet.
And there's no second R.
My mom's family was that white trash that you talked about from a different, so I think that's where the sherbet came from.
Yeah.
I like it. This is from TJ. Oh, our good friend TJ. Very talented individual. If you had a farm, do you have a farm? What would you drive and why? And thanks for bringing us Dwight.
If I had a farm, what would I drive?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be driving. I would be working the farm.
Yeah, but what would your farm I think this electric lightning is the answer.
I would have a donkey with a plow, and that's what I would be driving.
Donkey and a plow, TJ. TJ has a wonderful Porsche collection. Mr. Carter says, hi, Rain. Not a question, but I wanted to thank you for the immense number of times you've made me laugh. You probably don't always realize what that means to the little guy. P.S. You were brilliant on the Tim Ferriss podcast.
Oh, wow. That was a long time ago. Thank you. And you're not a little guy. No one is a little guy.
And one more here. Hey, Rain. Great work as ST Disco, Harcourt Fenton, Harry Mudd. Okay. So glad you took on the role.
Star Trek Discovery.
Do you have...
Star Trek Discovery is a TV show, Jay.
Is it?
Yeah, it's one of the new Star Trek derivations. And I did a recurring character of Harry Mudd, which was on the original series with Shatner.
Oh.
Who was a recurring character then. And I revised him.
Wow.
It was really fun. Yeah, it was really fun.
What kind of character is he?
Are you Harry Mudd is a rapscallion.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's a scoundrel, and he's a trader, merchant kind of guy.
Okay.
And he's always up to, he's always scheming.
Scheming. Sounds more like a night court character than...
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, he's like a space night court character. That's a good TV show. Space Court.
Space. Well, I remember Pigs in Space when I was a kid. That was
my favorite.
Pigs in Space. are you a Jim Henson fan? I feel like
I love,
you might,
yeah, I love Henson. Me too. Yeah,
so close to me.
Yeah.
I feel like that's work I grew up with, but yet I didn't really appreciate it till I was an adult.
Hmm. Yeah. Good point. Good point. Mm-hmm. It's great.
What do you think of Jim Henson?
I love Jim Henson. I don't. What can I say about Jim Henson?
Or Frank Oz? I think they're both a wonderful duo.
Incredible talent. Yeah, what can I say? I mean, I love the Muppet Show, and I loved all those Muppet movies, and, you know, they cheered up an entire generation, didn't they, Jay?
I feel like I was raised by the Muppets and Mr. Rogers. I'm of that, you know, I was raised on the box, for sure, raised on
okay.
the television.
Yeah, your parents didn't really raise you?
No.
Just eating sherbet and watching the tube?
My parents divorced when I was early, and my mom had some stuff going on, and then I kind of raised myself with that box, yeah,
okay.
hence all of this stuff.
Okay.
Go back to SNL, though, for a minute, though, because that's the first place I ever worked. I was a senior in high school, and I was interning at 30 Rock during the day. So I was working at Conan his first year and Saturday Night Live. So I know what you meant before when you said growing up, seeing that set, knowing that studio my whole life, and then walking into 30 Rock one day and then being there. Can we just zap back to you at SNL and tell me what that was like?
Yeah, so it's people really don't understand how intense that week is. It's absolutely crazy. Wednesday you go and people have a bunch of sketch ideas and they kind of, you sit in a big office, like a room this size, and everyone's on the floor and they kind of are reading their sketch ideas or sketches that they have. And then if you have any ideas, and they'll talk to you and you go around and meet the writers and say hello. And then they pull an all-nighter, the writers supposedly, and then they come in on Tuesday with a bunch of sketches and you read through them all. And there's like, you know, you're reading through 35 sketches that the writers have come up with. And then the producers kind of talk, blah, 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 and they cut it down. And they cut it down to, you know, 20, let's say, 18, and say, let's flesh those out. And then you start putting them on their feet and start rehearsing them, and they cut this one and they cut that one, and they're just always like trimming it down. But yeah, when you walk out on that stage and you see those kind of that kind of Times Square clock and the way the curtain is and where the band sits, and it hasn't changed that much since like 1977.
Right.
And
the room is the same. They've changed the home base set a tiny amount, but everything else is the same.
And it's really incredible because I go to my friend John's house and we would have a sleepover on Saturday night and we would watch Saturday Night Live back in the days of Buck Henry and Steve Martin and Tom Waits and, you know, George Carlin and all the crazy Ricky Lee Jones and all the, uh-huh. those crazy artsy
moments,
bohemian.
All the moments that happened.
Yeah. So seeing that, growing up with that, and then standing there and like rehearsing scenes with the cue cards, you know, it's amazing. And then, you know, Friday night you do a run through, and then you do an early run, and then they're still cutting, they're changing lines and rejiggering scenes and cutting scenes. And Saturday you have some rehearsal, and Saturday night you do a run through, and then at like 8 p.m., which is actually a really fun one if people can get tickets to go see
the dress rehearsal
at like 8 p.m. instead of the
I always said the same reason. What's your reasoning for that? I agree with you.
It's looser, it's wilder, it's funner, it's longer. They don't have the time constraint.
It's a half hour longer, exactly.
Yeah, and so there's extra scenes that don't make it.
Yep.
And it's really cool.
For me, one of the cool things about really, I guess maybe the whole building is that that space is sort of more famous than anybody who's in the hallways. It's so legendary, you know, from Carson and Parr and, you know, whatever, if you're into the talk show world, but just the amount of shows, if you're into television or even radio, it all started there, you know? And to me, I just celebrate that history so much. So, and I feel like other people do too. There's a weird respect that people I've seen in other places who might be a little more about themselves. It's like a it's a humbling experience being there. Yeah. Like, oh, holy shit, I'm actually here. I better not fuck this up.
Everyone takes down a notch. It's, no one wants to ask for anything.
It's like an ego check.
Yeah.
At least that's what that was my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing, amazing experience.
It's a very short list of, I mean, the show's been on for a million years, but it's a short list of people who've hosted it. I hope you're very proud of that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Did the show turn out how you wanted it to?
Yeah, the show was great. The episode was a really good one.
Awesome.
It was, and.
Oh, Arcade Fire.
Arcade Fire. That's, yeah. They were great.
Huge.
Yeah.
Very cool.
There was one sketch that was really, really funny, and it was me and Jason Sudeikis and Bill Hader, and I forget who else was in it, and it was MacGruber was in it. Oh. And then it aired live, and they got a big backlash, and they cut it, and you cannot find the sketch anywhere.
Oh, wow.
It's like it doesn't exist, because in it they talked about one of their kids saying, like, oh, I have a mongoloid kid, and to, like, entertain him, I'll throw coins into the fountain and watch him chase it or something like that. And it's like, you can't joke about, even in 2008 or whenever it was that I did it, like, you couldn't make jokes about mongoloid kids. So that, and it's a hysterical sketch. And I wish there was a version of it out there somewhere. If someone had taped the original.
This would have to be.
And have to put it on YouTube. That's my only.
It made it to the West Coast and everything, right? It just didn't make the reruns.
Yes. Okay. No reruns, no DVDs, nothing like that.
There were a couple times they've had to pull stuff down for the West Coast. Middle finger. Yeah. I think when she tore the Pope, when Sinead O'Connor tore the Pope in half.
Oh, that didn't make the West Coast.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Fascinating.
Yeah, we saw that.
Say again?
We saw that in the West Coast. It made.
Oh, okay. So it did. Oh, okay. Good.
Oh, they left it in.
Yep.
There were, I know there was a couple things. When I was there, Sherry O'Terry accidentally said the S word, like during a sketch. Like, can you believe the shit? Like that kind of thing. Like she just was kind of riffing. And they yanked that, obviously, but they left the sketch and they just kind of metered it. I was curious if it was something they could work around, or if they were like, nope, just get rid of it completely. For
it was too embedded in the sketch for them to do it. But.
What happened to the audio? You know what? This came up the other day, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm dying to. The Weird Al biopic.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
No.
Everyone says, please.
No. Nope.
Everyone says you're great in it, but then also I would love to have just been a part of that. So.
Who are you in that?
So this is a hysterical movie, and it's called Weird, the Al Yankovic Story, and Daniel Radcliffe plays a mythical version of Weird Al in this kind of alternative reality. It's kind of almost like how Airplane was to disaster movies. Like, this is about biopics, kind of. It's a real send-up of biopics, where Weird Al is the most famous musician, like, in the world, selling out Madison Square Garden, dating Madonna, you know, and meeting the Pope and stuff like that. And in this version, I play Dr. Demento, who discovered Weird Al in real life.
Right.
But this version of Dr. Demento, he's like the mover and shaker in Hollywood. He's like a big-time producer or something like that.
So you're all schmoozy and stuff?
Schmoozy.
Unlike the real Dr. Demento?
Yeah. Okay. Schmoozy and then,
unlike you, you're not the guy.
I'm not a schmoozy guy. And it's really funny. It's on Roku. No one knows how to watch anything on Roku, but you can even just go on your laptop to RokuChannel.com and watch it there, and then
stream it to
your TV.
We'll do that.
Yeah. It's very funny, and I really mean it. It's good for some really raucous belly laughs. It's very well done.
But the conceptually, that makes perfect sense. In that Weird Al would take top 40 songs, and then he would do these send-ups of them. So here we're taking the biopic story, and then we're going to do a send-up. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when it was first announced that Daniel Radcliffe was playing Weird Al, like the comments on like Reddit message boards were
cruel.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. Weird Al, 6'2", Daniel Radcliffe, 5'6", this is stupid. It's like, are you kidding me? You horrible, horrible losers of the internet. Give me a break.
Well, I mean, you're a 6'2" Norwegian and they wanted you to play a short Jew, right?
I know, right?
Isn't that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, well. What's coming up for you? Are you working right now, or are you kind of just doing talk shows and podcasts?
Yeah, I'm doing the talk show in the dining room circuit.
thanks for making time.
I just did a show for Apple TV called Lessons in Chemistry with Brie Larson. I played a supporting role in that. I'm going to do a movie in February with Laurel Harvey, who's a great actor, comedian, and I'm excited about that. And I wrote a book on spirituality called Soul Boom. Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution is what it's called. So that's coming out in April. I'm going to do a big book tour around that.
Okay. And, will you send us a copy?
I will. Yeah, I will.
Please.
You just mentioned a streamer, and there's another thing I forgot that we're going down this list of things here, but I watched this thing through twice, and then we watched it together, so I've seen it three times. Utopia. I loved the Utopia show. I'm not a comic book person. I've never read a comic book in my life. I loved this Utopia show on Amazon Prime, I think.
Yeah.
Highly recommended. I've recommended it to friends, but I'm doing it here too. Yeah. You were great in it, but I loved this little thing. I don't know if it's going to come back or not. Is there any chance it might come back?
It's dead.
Oh,
no.
Bummer.
No.
Where they could go in season two.
Utopia
was
very weird because it was based on an English show, kind of like The Office. And we shot it in Chicago before the pandemic. And as you know, the show Utopia is all about a pandemic and a virus being released. And it's pretty dark.
And about the
vaccines.
Vaccines. Yeah.
And people and in hazmat suits. And we were shooting it through September, October. And by March of the next year was the actual pandemic. So they were doing post-production of it. Live. And so here's Amazon inherits, you know, nine episodes of a show all about vaccines and pandemics and children dying from, like, diseases. And they're like, oh, fuck no.
What a shame.
They just dumped it, and they didn't want anything to do with it. I don't necessarily blame them, but it is a really terrific show. I think it's really wickedly fun.
It's wickedly fun. It's a great ride. We couldn't believe it was on television.
Yeah.
And when it came out, we were like, I can't believe this is on.
Yeah.
I feel like this is talking about now, and we're living it outside.
Yeah.
And wasn't John Cusack great in it?
Everybody's great in it. The girl who plays, what's her name? The main girl who's, she goes to sleep at the end.
Yeah.
I can't remember the character's name.
Sasha Lane was the actress who played her. Oh, yeah, she was great.
Whatever her name, don't forget to, I want to say Laura Palmer, but that's Twin Peaks. But she was great. And there's a lot of surprise twists in that show, too. Characters you think are going to be characters and things happen.
Yeah.
Thanks for
watching it. Cool.
Really enjoyed it. Okay, a couple more questions here, and then we will let you go. Thank you for being so
gracious. My pleasure. Good to be here.
Barf Baby says, I'm in Canada, too, but when you mention the other guy up in Canada, it makes me feel left out and devalued. Okay, that's very funny.
Good.
Nice t-shirts. Oh yeah, the t-shirts were we were going to change one of these t-shirts. Rain said to keep the t-shirts.
Yep. Good Vibes Breakfast Club, ladies and gentlemen.
Ryan S says, hi Jay and Nicole, long time no see. Hello. Hot girls here. Great. We'll skip all of those.
Sex 69, fun, hot girls.
The Letterman Podcast. By the way, this guy up in Canada is also the host of the Letterman Podcast. If you ever...
great.
Did you ever do the Letterman show as a guest?
I did Letterman a couple times, yeah.
How was that experience?
Three times.
It was amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah. Did you look it up, Letterman guy?
Yeah, oh yeah. You did it three times. And at some point, if you ever want to come on a podcast and talk about it, I'd be happy to have you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah.
He has, like, all the real crew members and stuff. I mean, he's legit. He's vetted.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Letterman was great. I mean, he was the best. I mean, it had a real New York feel. Like, you're going in this big theater, and it was an audience, and they're putting on a show, and you don't know what's going to happen, and the music's loud, and it was kind of raucous, and it was super fun.
Did you know that this was the old Letterman stuff? Well, this is Dave's old desk and microphone.
I read that. Yeah, that's amazing. That's absolutely, that's incredible.
Full nerd.
That's amazing. Where did you get it?
A museum that had it contacted us, believe it or not. Absolutely unbelievable. Believe it or not. Can't be believed.
I know Mark's a good thing we picked the hot one, but I bring more to the table.
What?
His manager that Mark I Shulman. Met up there said at a talk show, I forget which one, Good thing we picked the hot one.
Oh, meaning you, the hot publicist.
Young and hot. Yeah, I can walk
you're still hot. Irene Hoffman, my bobblehead from years ago went through my house burning down, and he still sits on my shelf, soot-covered. Love it. How about that? She literally had her house burned down. That's amazing.
Hey, Jay.
Yes.
You missed on the YouTube questions. There was one that you skipped by, and okay. Lucy Bailey, she okay. wants to know. And then somebody on Instagram asked about Super as well. Hey, Rain, Super is one of my favorite movies. It seems to have a bit of a cult following now. Is there any chance we'll ever see the Crimson Bolt again?
Before you, is that Gunn? James Gunn?
Yeah, James Gunn. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did
that. He's really good.
He's something, that James Gunn. This was right before Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, it was a low-budget indie film called Super, a really super dark comedy with Elliot Page, who was then Ellen Page, and Kevin Bacon. And
holy crap.
It had a great cast. And Michael Rooker.
Oh, you're
super
buddy.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah, so I would love to do the Crimson Bolt again. I think it would be really, really fun. I think maybe we should do the Super, the TV show.
You should.
Yeah.
Is that even possible, or is that just a quick?
Sure. I think it's possible. I think James Gunn is on to bigger things. He's now running DC.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah, like all of DC Comics and DC Media and stuff like that, and directing $200 million movies. So I doubt
that. I knew that part. I knew he was doing that.
Yeah. He doesn't have the time to be thinking about like little weird old indies that he did.
Does that mean he's in control of the DC universe?
Yeah.
And he decides what happens. I mean, again, not a comic book guy, but I know that's a big role.
Yeah. Yeah. They pulled the plug. I think they fired Superman and they pulled the plug on Wonder Woman, and they're kind of reconfiguring how they're doing everything over in DC land. That's
what's
going to
happen
know.
At the Fortress of Solitude? Is that the right thing?
People will be alone. That is the right world, yeah.
From God.
Gotham and Metropolis. Those are the two DC cities.
That's it?
I don't think there's any other cities.
Is Spider-Man DC?
No.
But it's not Marvel either, is it?
I think he's Marvel.
Oh, shit. All right.
Yeah.
I only know. It was the TV shows I watched growing up. Say again, buddy.
I've got one more, and the person doesn't want to identify himself because he thinks it might be a controversial question.
Okay.
There's a deleted scene of Rainn Wilson and Jason Reitman about to kill each other on the set of Juno, and I always wondered if it was fake, but I'd be too afraid to ask Rainn about it.
Juno, I like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's another one, speaking of Elliot Page.
Juno, yes, I did played a small role in that, and... it's completely real. He bugged the crap out of me, and we got into it on the set, and we almost threw down. And they have that scene on YouTube, which is really unfortunate.
Why did they?
Totally bullshitting you. I'm totally bullshitting. It was all staged. It was all fake. Of course, it was fake. Do they really think that they're gonna record a big fight with me and Jason Reitman and then put it on YouTube?
I don't know. Oh, good for you. Makes me think of that. Good for you. Speaking of Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
That one I think was real.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Christian Bale, yeah.
Did you see the new movie he's in? We just watched it the other night.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, did you like it?
I can't think of the name of it even.
What Babylon?
No, Amsterdam.
Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I thought Amsterdam and Babylon were the same movie for a long time. Because it's a lot of like A-list movie stars going like, hey, we're
that's
in the 20s. Hey, what do you
what
say?
I, told her. I said they almost had a lot of fun like acting in this movie because they're all just acting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Old school acting.
Old school acting. Yeah. I didn't like it very much. You liked it?
Well, no. I felt we watched the whole thing and I didn't know how I felt about it throughout, except that every time they'd launch a new person, I'd go, holy shit, I can't believe they kept getting, the cast was ridiculous. But I did feel stupid afterwards for having not known that story. I felt uneducated for not knowing what was apparently a very significant story.
What story is that? Because I don't even know. About halfway through, I turned it off.
I couldn't understand what was happening. Your point. It seems to me the movie was about the beginning of paid politics in this country.
Okay.
Of bought politics in this country.
Okay.
And it was about somebody standing up against them, and it's this whole thing about three people who were regular people, but they became spies. I think the fact that it was a true story worked against it, because they couldn't take some liberties and make it a better movie.
I don't think that's what made it a bad movie, but okay.
Fine.
All right. The Rocker was better than Amsterdam.
All right, Mike, do we have any more questions, or are we going to let Rain out of here?
We do, actually.
Go ahead.
The first thing, by the way, Irene and Rupert G. are watching right now, and they wanted to say hi. So they're watching together.
Oh, Rupert G. from
right
Hello
now.
Deli, speaking of Letterman.
Oh, okay.
They
oh,
sponsor
great.
The show.
Oh, wow, beautiful. Thank you. Hi, Rupert.
You remember Rupert?
Sure.
The other thing is, it's you know what? Finishing on a car question. Rain, the car people in the room, can you talk about the choice of the Firebird in The Office? It was a fascinating part of your character.
Ooh, you drove a Firebird?
Yeah. So the great question, and that goes back to, you know, when I brought in pictures of my kind of white trash family, I think I had one of my uncle who had like a muscle car, and that's where the writers had the idea that it would be really funny that, because the fun thing about Dwight, one thing that I really liked is that he was both really nerdy, and at the same time, he was kind of a white trash bully. So he's like, you can't really put your finger on like,
who is this guy?
Is he nerdy or is he like, is he kind of a bully? And they thought it would be really funny that he's a farmer, paper salesman with a muscle car who loves Battlestar Galactica. So
see this, I feel like these are people I know. I feel like this is a real dude. So this makes sense.
It's the guys I grew up with and played Dungeons and Dragons with in suburban Seattle in the 80s, believe me.
Did you really play? You can't drop that if you didn't really.
Oh, yeah, I did.
All right.
Big time. Yeah, I was all in. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry I don't have more to say about cars, you guys.
Who cares about that?
Yeah.
I used to get the D&D thing all the time. People always wanted to play you.
They wanted to play me in D&D?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that true? Because they'd find out that Rainn Wilson is in. Oh, I have a friend who's in. Yeah,
they didn't want to ever talk about what the interview we were setting up was about. They wanted to play that game.
Sofia Vergara's husband. Do you still play? You don't still play.
Or
you
still have a present? No, I haven't. No, in a while.
Sofia Vergara's husband?
What's Joe Mandela.
Yeah, he's in that group with Danbury Chive's brother.
Right.
It's amazing how many. Patton Oswalt plays, too.
He does?
Oswalt. Yeah, he plays.
It's funny how many active people in the biz are still D&Ding.
I don't have the time, but it would be fun. I'd love to try it again.
That's a really good point. Who the hell has the time for that anymore? When we were kids, you got nothing but time.
Yeah.
Mike, next.
That seems to kind of be it.
Oh, okay,
but,
great.
Just
awesome.
So you know, I still role play.
In Mike. The bedroom.
Mike, do you have anything for Rain? I'd like to give you an opportunity. Mike is a big fan of everything. He's a big fan of everything.
Oh, okay.
He collects sneakers. He's the Letterman podcast guy. He knows everything about comic books. He's a big fan of everything.
Right on.
Yeah, it's been hard. I was really restraining myself because I host a men's mental wellness podcast right there. I wanted to go deep there. Letterman stuff, I'd love to go deep there. And also, my wife and I, The Office is like our... It's our tomato soup and grilled cheese on a cold day. It's really our comfort food. We'll go through it once every 18 months or whatever. So I got so many like nerd Dwight questions I could ask you. But I will ask you this one question here with the opportunity. As the years went by in The Office, obviously your name would appear in different places in the credits, producer, I think director as well. Was there a part of being... on that side of the camera or that part of the production that appealed to you that you would like to still carry on? Or is acting, and especially that role, the improv type acting, kind of your what you love?
Thanks. Great question, Canadian. one of the perks of being on a show that goes on for a really long time is they allow you and you get to direct. So it's a really fun experience because you're very familiar with how the show works and where the camera goes and working with the crew and the cinematographer and stuff. But yeah, I directed 3 episodes of The Office. It was really fun. It definitely whetted my appetite to want to do more directing. I've written a couple of scripts. I've been kind of trying to get off the ground here and there, which is difficult. And... and I've kind of, I'm heading a little bit more in that direction, some more writing and more directing, but I'll always love acting and fit that in when I can. So, Yeah.
I have a feeling like you'd be a really good director. Again, all that technical stuff.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, you enjoyed the experience. Were you happy with the result of your episodes?
Yeah, I am. There's one I directed, Classy Christmas, where Dwight hides inside the snowman and pummels Jim, and they get in a giant snowball fight. And I'm very proud of that episode. That one was especially good. It was a really kind of a classic Office episode.
It sounds like you went outside the studio for that too, right?
Yeah, we did that sometimes. We would, and this was a big snowball fight, nightmare snowball fight with giant snowmen in the parking lot. It was really a lot of fun.
But did you have to make all the snow, or did you go do it someplace where there was
no snow? They brought in a snow machine and made
That's
it.
That's always,
you know,
the most fun.
Yeah.
Hollywood, baby.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's incredible what they do. They back it up, and it's like it just goes and just fills with snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Office location, this is something that I thought was really amazing. You were giving – was this a – I don't know if it was a charity thing or what, but you were giving – personalized tours of the Office location.
That's right. Yeah.
How did somebody win that, or how did that happen?
So my wife and I and some Haitian friends started a nonprofit called Lide Haiti that does girls' education in Haiti. And every year I do various kinds of fundraisers. And I did and for the last 3 or 4 years I've done location tours. So it's on a thing called Prizio. It's essentially a raffle. It's an online raffle. You spend $5 or $10, you buy a bunch of tickets, and then we draw a ticket at random, and then that person gets flown to LA and gets an Office tour. So it's really, super fun.
By perhaps their favorite character from The Office.
And then
that's
I always bring
cool.
other Office characters by and have them. We go. We had an episode that was set in Benihana. We all go have lunch at Benihana. you know. Stuff like that. So it's super fun.
That must make their lives.
Yeah.
To be there in the
place
with the person.
The ultimate Office fan experience. Yeah, absolutely.
Is the location still the same as it was when you shot there?
Well, we shot in these sound stages that we dressed up to look like the Dunder Mifflin offices out in Van Nuys.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so those sound stages are still there, but they don't really look exactly the same as when we had them dressed.
Did you at any point ever actually work in that building, in the office? Like, did they ever shoot practically, or was it always on stage? Because I was under the impression, like, oh, you were really shooting in that building there.
In a soundstage, they built an office. Right. So that's what we shot. In.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You really should watch the show sometime.
I'm going to check it out. Yeah. It's supposed to be good. I've heard good things. Yeah. Rain, thank you so much for being here today. I mean, this means the world to both of us, really, thank but you. To her especially. You have no idea.
Well, I love Nicole so much. She's such a dear friend, and it's so great seeing you again.
Same.
And so much love, and very nice meeting you. I love you as a newfound friend, and thanks for having me. This was really thank delightful. You. I love what you guys have done.
We're crazy.
Amazing.
We're nuts.
You're crazy. You're in certifiably insane. I wish people knew kind of where this set was. I wish they had some idea.
Well, perhaps today, having you been here, they're going to watch. The guy from The Office was in there. Maybe we'll tune in. Thanks again. Seriously.
Thanks
and come back
me.
Anytime. When you get a book, come out. We want to read the book.
Great. Okay. I'll send you a book. I'll be back.
All right. I love you. We love all of you at home. Please love one another. And producer Mike, we're going to sign off early tonight. That's okay with you, right?
Peace and love. This
All right,
is a great
we love
episode.
Everybody.
Thanks, Mike.
Have a great night. See you out there.
Bye, everybody.